Welcome to the True Face Podcast. My name is Robbie Engel, and I'll be your guide as we have conversations about what we can learn from what's going on in our lives. Most of us get stuck in our relationships with God and others, and we end up wondering, is this really all there is to it? Here's a question. What if God isn't who you think he is, and neither are you? The grace-based relational discipleship resources at trueface.org will help you answer that, to help you live into your true identity. And this conversation with Chad will help you do that. And so whether you're watching this on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast, please remember to subscribe and share with people and join our growing tribe of Jesus followers by going to trueface.org. And along those lines, we are gathering together as a tribe for the second annual retreat. It is October 11th through the 13th. I was looking at my calendar over there on the wall. Black Mountain, North Carolina, outside of Asheville, October 11th through the 13th. You're going to want to come. I'm going to be speaking, and it's going to be amazing. And even more exciting is Jamie and Donna Winship. Some of you have read their book, Living Fearless. They're going to be joining us in teaching. It's going to be an epic retreat. And so it's going to be on identity, how you see yourself, how God has designed you. We're going to be going deep. And so go to trueface.org, click on experiences, click on retreat. And if you type in LEAP 50, L-E-A-P 50 during registration before March 31st, it'll be $50 off. So sign up, bring your spouse, bring your friends, neighbors, whatever. There's limited spots and this thing's going to be full. So don't say I didn't warn you first as the podcast group. All right. So I'm pumped about this guy and this guest for all kinds of reasons. Our guest today is Chad Well. Sounds pretty legit. Chad Well, he goes by Chad Clemens. He's been in ministry for forever. He started a couple churches. He planted a couple churches. He worked at North Point, helping oversee the network of churches, the operation, the leadership of those pastors, as he was a lead pastor for tons of years. He's been married to his high school sweetheart, Kathy, for 33 years. They have a daughter, Sierra, who's in New York. And I'll give a little more context in a minute, Chad, but Chad started as the new COO running the ship at True Face December 1st, and it has already been a game changer for this team and this ministry, and amazing for me. Chad, welcome, and be introduced to the tribe. A lot of them don't even know you, but they will. What I miss, man, in the intro.
I think you pretty much hit it all. I mean, there's a lot of pain in between those transition stories, you know, because every transition has a little bit of uncertainty. So there's a lot of trust that's been developed over the years. 26 years of ministry this year. And starting churches from scratch. I started my first church when I was 29, which just meant that I thought I knew more than anybody else in the world because I was 29. And what a humbling process, you know, starting a church with a few friends, learning a ton over that first church plant, then getting to plant a second church with an organization that really helped impact my leadership development with North Point as a partner down in Florida. And just a lot of growth in between. And it's fun to be a part of this team, man. When you invited me to this conversation around what it would look like to be a part of True Face, it just aligns so much with what God has kind of written in my story. And I think our first interaction was like 2015 or something like that. So we've been tracking together for a while. This is not a new conversation for us, for sure.
Now, Chad, so Bill Thrall told me, 4.5 years ago when I was transitioning into this role, he said, Robbie, you've got to really prayerfully discern who do you want to do ministry with? Because you're not going to make it 20, 30 years unless you have some with people in it with you. Yeah. And so that's been in my prayers and my hopes for the past, I've been in this role more than four and a half years. And that's been that thing. And you've been a friend for, almost a decade. So I texted you a couple times over the past like 6 years, like, hey, I think I'm gonna go to True Face. You want in, you know, and then a couple times. And then I think I texted you probably 7 or 8 months ago. And I was like going through like, man, we need a leader to help organizationally lead TrueFace and like from team development to strategy to implementation of all the different lanes that we have going on. And I was like, oh, Chad would be so perfect. And that text, man, I remember I was like, are you ready yet? And you were like, let's talk. And I was like, there's a chance. You're telling me there's a chance. And how God has orchestrated, man, the past few months, and then how you've started, I am pumped. It is a game changer for our ministry to have you on board.
I just feel like, Robbie, the work we're doing, man, is strong work. I mean, anytime you can take the message of grace and try to scale that so it can impact as many as possible. I mean, what we're really trying to do is start a movement of grace. And I think about things that are worth giving yourself to and, you know, what you would devote yourself to. And I've done that for 26 years in ministry. I feel like, you know, you've got to have a pretty big why. And man, our first conversation, I remember, I think it was in August when we talked last year. And, well, you texted me first. I said, let's talk. But then when we actually got on the phone later that week, I had like one of the worst days in a long time. And I remember telling you, it was like 5:30. I was on my way home from work. And you're like, let's talk about this thing. Da, da, da. I was like, Robbie, I'm not going to make a decision on this conversation because I'm tired and I'm hungry and I haven't seen my wife in like 3 weeks. Yeah. You know, I was like, dude, I can't make any really rational decision right now. I had a salad for lunch. Like, come on, I need to recover. So you gave me like almost a month. You said, hey, man, marinate on this idea. I'm not going to pitch it to you. And I did. I marinated, met with a lot of people, prayed. But, you know, when you think about what you give yourself to, like for me, creating a movement of grace for thousands of people, tens of thousands of people around the world to begin to see God in a really true light that sets people free from the lies that they've lived. I'm like, let's go, you know? And then a truer version of what does God see in you and how do you see yourself? Like that stuff, you know, as the old adage says back, you know, I'm an agriculture major. So back in the day, you know, what cranks your tractor? That's what fires you up, man. And so for an agriculture major back in the day, 1996 is when I graduated from the University of Florida. This stuff really gets me fired up, man.
That's awesome. When did you give us a little context of how you came across TrueFace, how that kind of affected you, the church you were leading? Give some context.
Yeah. So in 2008, I launched a partner church with North Point down in Florida. And, you know, like most people in ministry, you lead out of what you've been taught, what you've learned. And so I was leading out of that and I wasn't happy with it. I was frustrated. I found myself stuck several times, even as a pastor. I just felt stuck. I felt stuck in spiritual formation. I felt stuck in how to actually lead, you know, staff through dynamic change and development. And in 2011, I was introduced to a concept from a group of guys I'd never met. They were all from Nebraska, and we met in Estes Park, Colorado for a week-long retreat. And it was at that retreat that I first was introduced to some stuff from John Eldridge. And I had read Wild at Heart, but it just had not been transformed. It didn't go from my head to my heart, you know? I'd read it, and I thought it meant something, but I didn't know how to live by it. And then I went on this retreat, and this guy that was leading it in 2011 was kind of a disciple of John Eldridge, had started a ministry called Harbor Ministries. And I'm at this retreat with this group of guys. And that's when it started moving from here to here, was in 2011. I didn't quite know how to apply it, honestly. I just knew I needed to live and lead differently. So I grappled with that for 3 or 4 more years. And then we bumped into each other by happenstance. I don't know if you remember this first interaction. We were actually in the break room of North Point Community Church. And you walked in to the room with Clay Scroggins and some other leaders, and you pitched this idea about a leadership development initiative that you were building. What you didn't know was I was sitting in the break room because I had brought some leaders up from Florida to kind of meet their counterparts and go through like a couple days workshop with some leaders there. And I was sitting in the corner of the break room and I was actually typing up a leadership development program for men at our church to try to re-engage guys to get off the sideline and stop being passive and to engage in leadership. And when you started going through your kind of like framework for what you're going to do with leadership development, I was looking at my screen going, holy cow, it's like we've written like almost the same thing. I had different books and stuff like that. And so we talked after that meeting. And in that conversation, I shared with you the book I was going to start with, which was Lead for God's Sake, which is a story about a janitor, you know, who makes an impact. And you're like, I think you should read Bo's Cafe. I'd never read it. I'd never heard of True Face. You're like, you should read Bo's Cafe. Before you decide, read this book. So I read it, and that was it. I was off to the races. Because then when I read Bo's Cafe, this was 2015. Then I read The Cure, and I quickly replaced some of the books in my leadership development. You shared your entire playbook with me. You're like, hey, bro, use this, cut it up, make it whatever you think you need, and then just let me know what you're doing to improve it. So I went, you know, I went full steam ahead down in Florida with building out leadership, and that's kind of how it started changing. And I decided then that some of the resources of True Face were going to become the vetting tools for how leaders not only were developed at my church, but how I invited people into eldership, how we actually started building the structure of government. Like we were saying, hey, if we're going to put ourselves in the place where we can help build community, let's build a community of grace. Let's create safe spaces for people to wrestle with their faith. And the ugliest version of them could be seen anyway and loved through it all. So it really transformed in 2015 into a really beautiful journey of changing some things for our church and impacting the way we led people in leadership. So
that's amazing. Give me more specifics on how would you use the teaching as part of the vetting and development of elders in your church?
Yeah. So, you know, there's people that you have kind of targeted, like, hey, I think this guy would be a great leader. This guy would be a great elder, or this lady would be a phenomenal, leader for our church. And I would look at those people and know them a little bit, but I wasn't quite sure, like, what was their view of God? What was their view of self? So I would start passing out these books, you know, I'd buy a case of The Cure at a time, or, you know, a case of Bo's Cafe, whatever. And I just say to them, like, hey, read this, and over the next few weeks, I'll connect back with you. We'll grab coffee. I just want to know what you're thinking. Like, when you read this, what does it do to you, you know? And that became kind of the litmus test. Mm. If someone would pick up that resource and read it, and then we meet for coffee a few weeks later, and they go, where has this been my whole life? You know, or my gosh, I thought I was doing it, you know. And so like those conversations would just spin off into, okay, if this is something that resonates with you, let's talk more. Let's go deeper.
That's awesome.
And so it became kind of the litmus test for, were they willing to engage in creating a community like this?
That's awesome. Yeah. And Eldridge being a part of your story, I was impacted by his teaching as well. And then finally got to meet him a couple months ago in person and spend some time with him, which was really, really cool because he's one of those guys that's been around doing ministry on the ground for a while. And I had more respect for him after hanging out with him for 2 days than before, which is always encouraging.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah.
But yeah, we were talking about, stages. Obviously, I talk to everybody I trust to try to figure out my midlife adjustment selfishly in my counseling of like, hey, is this normal that I feel this way at 41? And, you know, all the stuff. And we were talking about different seasons, and you started unpacking some seasons, which were adapted from some of his stuff. And I was like, hey, I want to continue that conversation, but let's just record it and share it with our friends. So we're jumping into that conversation, which we started that we didn't go to because I was like, let's just have that over the podcast. So give us some context and some thoughts that you started bringing me onto to level set where we're at in regards to this thinking.
Yeah, that's good, man. I feel like it starts with being stuck. So I go all the way back to my story. So 2011, I felt stuck. I had planted my second church. I've been in ministry for a few years at that point, probably 10 or 15. And I just felt stuck, man. And I wasn't quite sure what to do. I'd learned this practice during that season or phase. And it was, you probably heard of the OODA loop. Have you heard of that? The process of, basically it's the process of getting unstuck. It's called an OODA loop. You Google it or look it up. But it basically means that you're going to observe, you're going to orient, you're going to decide, you're going to act. So in the the basis of the OODA loop is you have to like, you have to stand still. Like, and that's tough for a leader, man, especially a church planner who's, you know, basically building the airplane while you're trying to fly it. I mean, it's like, I don't have time to stand still. I'm too busy to stand still. I don't have the luxury of rest is what I used to tell myself. I used to say this like with pride, like, you know, sleeping is for the dead, or the lion never sleeps, or, you know, all these stupid adages that I would say that I thought were like, they were more empowering for like, hey, I got work to do, get out of my way kind of stuff. The truth is that's a myth and it's a trap. And I mean, the military teaches the OODA loop for a reason, because you do need to stand still. You need to observe. I mean, if you're in a dogfight and bullets are whizzing by you, you kind of need to stand still and orient yourself, you know, like say, where's the next step before you just start moving.
Yep.
So observe, orient, decide, act. So what happened when John Eldridge kind of like, you know, kind of came into my life, there was this like, what's that on the screen? Oh, it's throwing up the thumbs. I don't know what that's the new Zoom feature, right?
That's right.
You can just do thumbs up all day. But when John Eldridge kind of came into my life during that season, what I realized was I had never identified where I was at in my stage of life. So I was running ahead full steam, trying to take on new ground, trying to build new things. And I had not stopped to observe what stage of my life was I in.
Mm.
And I love the way John kind of like, I can't remember exactly what book. I know it's in a lot of his writings. It's Wild at Heart and some others, but he talks about like, you know, boyhood, cowboy, warrior, lover, king, sage. I think he lists out like six or seven. I may be getting them wrong. We can correct them and put the right stuff in a lower third or something maybe. But he lists out these stages, right, of a man. And what I have failed to realize was I didn't know where I was at in the process. And you can't really make progress unless you know where you're starting.
Mm.
Like every destination starts with, you know, getting started. You got to get in the vehicle to go to your destination. And for me, I was running ahead without clarity on the stage. And that kind of helped me kind of reset and kind of really do a hard reset on, like the kind of leader I wanted to be. My pursuit for grace started out of that observation. I realized I was leading out of some old lies that had been handed down generation to generation through religion. And it was, you know, no more, behave better, and that equals growth. And that formula sucks. I mean, it just doesn't work. No more, behave better does not equal, it does equal something, but it doesn't equal growth. I mean, I was stuck. I was the opposite of growth. So observe is a really important part of that for me. That was a big part of the beginning of the story, and how I kind of moved into the second part.
Yeah, I'm just like this in all aspects of my life, but especially in the bigger patterns or inflection points, I quickly go to decide and act. And, and yeah, it's difficult to slow down enough to observe and then have the patience to orient or the perspective to orient. And yeah. So you're saying that the different generational patterns helped you orient. Oh, this is why I'm here. It's not, I won't be here for forever. And I wasn't here 10 years ago, but based on where I'm at orientation wise, this helps me make a better decision on what the decision is and action is.
Yeah, because I stayed most of my life on the backside of that loop. I was decide, act, decide, act, decide, act. I used to say, hey, let's just throw stuff on the wall and see what sticks, because we just need to keep making decisions.
Yep.
And that is an approach, but it's probably not the healthiest approach, right? And so that was the first part of kind of me resetting and understanding the development that God was wanting to do in my life. Now, I will say, and this is kind of where you and I went the other day when we were talking. You're like, whoa, hold on. Let's do this in a pot. Let's record this conversation. Because the second part of that process for me was where transformation started happening.
Hmm.
And that's the part. I hope we have time in our time today to really dig into that. Because that's the part, man. I think that's where the juice is at.
Tell me. Let's go.
Let's go. All right. So, you know, I think John Eldridge and others have done a great job of laying out the stages. Boyhood, cowboy warrior, lover, what is it? King, sage. I'm trying to find out. I don't know where it's at, but I think those are the five or six.
Which would work for women as well in a lot of those principles. They'll be subtly different, but they're still stages. 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s are going to look different for men and women in that process.
Yes. And different temperaments for the engagement of what that means you're holistically, you know, caring for or, you know, having to nurture at the moment. But here's what was missing for me. It was the shadow side of each of those stages. Hmm. So I could read through those stages and understand, okay, I'm not a cowboy anymore. I feel like I'm in that lover stage, but I want to be the king who has conquered some stuff. And so I could read into that story and see where I wanted to go, like what I wanted to accomplish, what I didn't accomplish, or what I want to go toward. But the problem was I was missing this, like, I think there's a shadow side to every stage. So what I began to kind of like explore was what are the shadow sides of each stage that causes you to get stuck? Because here's what I discovered. I was stuck, but the reason why I was stuck was because I was still connected to a lie. And I couldn't embrace the truth, which is the essence of confession, right? I couldn't embrace that confession of truth. So I couldn't forgive myself. And I couldn't forgive others, which meant there was no way for me to be transformed. I was stuck. So I started thinking through the shadow sides of each stage, and I listed them out. So I've got seven shadow sides, and I've got them listed up here on my screen. The first one, and I think a lot of people, whether boy or girl, doesn't matter, they ask themselves at some point in their early childhood development, how old do I have to be to matter? Hmm. How old? And you got a 13-year-old that's like bowing up at mom, or, you know, trying to draw a line with dad. I'm stronger than you. You don't have to tell me what to do. The reason why that is kind of like rising up in them is because they're asking the question, how old do I have to be to matter? Hmm. Like, I couldn't wait to turn double digits. Hmm. I thought when I got to 10, bro, I was going to be the junk. I'd be able to play basketball with my older cousins. I'd be invited into the circle.
Yeah.
And what I realized when I was 10 was that I wasn't 13. And it was like, oh man, I can't wait to be a teenager, because as soon as I'm a teenager, I'm going to matter. People are going to invite me into the circle. And then I realized I didn't have a car, right? So now I want to be 16. And then it's like, well, I'm not old enough to drink. I want to be, you know, 18 back in the day, 21 now. But so what happens is you kind of get stuck in this thing. How old do I have to be to matter? And if that's where you get stuck, man, I know a lot of guys who are in their 40s and 50s, they're still stuck with that lie. And they can't move forward in life, so they're stuck there. The second one is, when are people going to respect me? Which I think is the cowboy phase. I think that's the reason why the cowboy story, if you were to look at cowboy movies, like, I think that's the whole point of those stories is like, I've got a gun and you're going to have to respect me, right? Mm-hmm. Because the shadow side of that stage is, when are people going to respect me? And as a young man, like, you are grappling trying to get people to respect you. You know, that's why the 19-year-old who cannot grow facial hair, and I was that guy, all right? It's why I tried to grow facial hair at 19. And failed miserably. I mean, if you'd have seen my first mustache, it's like I'd have to stand sideways with, you know, like a sandstorm for you to even see it sticking to my lip. You know, it's just like I had no facial hair at 19, but I tried. And the reason why I tried was because I wanted people to respect me. I thought that would equal respect, right? That was a stuck stage for me.
So that stuck point is typically in 20s. Of like trying, finding our own way, get out of college. Am I lovable? Will somebody respect me? Like, will I find a spouse? Will I find a good job? Will I, like, that significance, purpose, 20s is really underpinned with, are people going to respect me?
I think it's why you see so many 20-year-old leaders that are taking giant grasp at roles or authority, they call it. And they're like, I need the authority because I need to speak more. People need to hear me. And I'm like, well, is it about movement or is it about posture?
It's awesome.
Because you can move a lot, but if you have the wrong posture, it doesn't matter. You don't really have authority. Posture is what helps invite that like level of maturity, that authority. So I think that's just an area people get. I got stuck there, man. I'm telling you, wanting people to respect me in my 20s was a big deal for me.
That's awesome.
If you feel like you have to have all the answers, it's the why behind me planning a church at 29.
And
29 and years old, I planted my first church. Why? Because I wanted people to respect me. That's a bad motive for planting a church.
and there's a lot. I mean, yeah, we know a lot of people stuck at different ages in that shadow side of that developmental journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
The third stuck point is, do I have what it takes? Do I have what it takes? And this one and the next one are very similar. So I'll go ahead and read the fourth one. The fourth one is, what if people find out I'm not capable? And these two, I think, are the most connected to the imposter syndrome. And I think that starts hitting in the 30s. I think it starts manifesting in like your 30s and your 40s. You're like, what if I don't have what it takes? What if people find out I'm not capable? Man, when I came into this kind of understanding, this like epiphany in 2011. So I'm in my, I'm just turning 40. Okay. So I'm just turning 40 at this point, and I'm like, new decade, new me. I'm going to be the best shape of my life. Da, 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 da. Running triathlons, trying to climb 14ers in Colorado, all this stuff in my 40s that I felt like I needed to conquer. It was really connected to, I needed to say to the world, I have what it takes and I'm more than capable, which meant I was actually trying to overcompensate for a shadow side where I felt stuck. Because what I didn't want people to find out is, man, if they really knew who I was and how I led and what my vices were, what my hangups were, I'm going to be found out. I'm the imposter, right? I'm the lead pastor who doesn't have what it takes, and I'm going to get found out at any moment that I'm not capable. That is a recipe for bad decision making. It's a recipe for burnout, because then you start living in the lie instead of the truth. And you, man, that's a wicked, wicked place to be. So that's where I found myself in 2011, wrestling with all of this.
Not to over spiritualize that, but I'm going to try. In our 30s, like when that shadow side line, 30s, 40s of, do I have what it takes? Like that insecurity of then like being found out drove me in 30s to double down on what I can do, which is in my control, which is rooted in my pride. And we do that in religion. No more like a lot of pastors, leaders, in and out of the church in 30s, it's like, okay, I'm going to, it starts to creep up. Do I have what it takes? What if people find out that I'm not capable? So what do? We overcompensate and do what we can do, which is learn more, do better, which accelerates that dissonance between Christ in me versus knowing him in our head versus knowing him. And then that's a big stuck point in a lot of our Christian journeys.
Man, I was so stuck there. And when I finally read The Cure, and I think I've told you this since I come to work here, it took me a long time to read The Cure, man. Mm-hmm. It's not a hard book. It's not a long book. It shouldn't have taken me that long. But I was mad. Like the first three chapters of that book, man, I just got mad. Because I'm like, how else are you supposed to do this?
Yeah.
Like I used to say, man, it's got to be hard. Like being a Christian's got to be hard, you know? Or if it was easy, babies would be doing it, right? So I'm like, I was so mad, man. It took me a long time to get through that book because I had to get the lie of where I was stuck, and it was all up here. I had to get transformation. I had to come to a place of confession with God that I had not trusted him with my life, that I trusted my own control. You know, and so that was a tough season for me. 2011 was a pretty transformative year. The next few years got better. I started moving over. I think I felt like in the latter part of that decade, as I was coming out of 2011 into like the, you know, 2016, 17, 18, I was leading people through this stuff. But I discovered the fifth shadow side. And I was probably in my late, coming out of my 40s, so 47, probably 47, 48. And I felt like I was transitioning again. And the fifth one is, what if my faults and failures get exposed and people stop believing in me? That one was tough for me, man. I didn't sit in it long because I felt like God was liberating me in a lot of ways through the message of grace. But I had to identify that shadow side, or else it would have, I think it would have derailed me in my late 40s, early 50s. I have seen and worked with a lot of leaders across the United States that as pastors, they get stuck in that spot because they think you can't lead for 20 years and not have failures. It's not possible. You can't lead for 20 years and not have done something that you're like, crap, if everybody found out that I did it that way, no one's going to believe that they want to like follow me anymore, right? So you can't lead for that long without having made some of those kinds of errors. And I think when you're in your late 20s of ministry or 25 years of ministry, you start asking yourself, if people find out, they're going to not believe in me anymore, which is a lie, yeah. Right? Because yeah. we can't live in that, like that arrested state.
It's interesting that pressure gets bigger. It builds past the what if I have what it takes, and what if people found out I'm not capable? That's almost a deeper of like the fields and failures build up, and therefore they deepen it, which puts more weight on the mass to pose, to keep a distance. And by that time, we're leaders, and so it's easier to move into isolation or keeping people at a distance.
Isolation. I think isolation is the key indicator that fifth shadow side has arrested someone. When you see a leader who is isolated and they can't list, I asked a young leader this question. Sometimes I take guys into like the mountains for a few days just to kind of break away from the monotony. And I ask them tough questions on these adventures. And one of the questions I asked this young leader was, we were sitting around the campfire. I was like, hey, Kyle, who's on the list to carry your casket when you die?
Yeah.
Who's on the list to carry your casket when you die? Who are your pallbearers? And he just looked at me. You know, this guy is 38. I think he's a young professional. He said, Chad, I bet I don't have two people on my list to carry my casket. I was like, bro, you have a chance to change that story.
Yeah.
Like, get some people around you. And I think that's, isolation is, I think, a giant killer for leadership. And I've watched pastors burn out over and over and over and over. Over 26 years of ministry, I just have seen so much of that. And I've watched guys get into their 50s and have basically pushed away and said, no, they're not going to touch me. They're not going to hurt me anymore. And so they become less known and more isolated.
There are dynamics at when I work with no leaders as they move into 50s and 60s. There are dynamics that make it harder and harder to remain deeply known and not slide into isolation, partly because you become the answer person and you lose your humble, curious muscles get atrophy because you don't use them as much because you have the answers and people come to you for the answers.
Yeah. And they want you out.
Yeah, that humility, curiosity muscle gets atrophy. And also the more you're growing, the less peers you might have in that place to relate to some of the pressures. And that's hard. And I'm not going to I think that awareness as I'm heading into these years is I'm going to have to be twice as proactive to who are the guys, who in my life knows my last 5% that I'm intentional with. That takes work. And if you don't work at it, it ain't going to happen.
No, it ain't. I mean, this sixth shadow side, Robbie.
Yeah, what's that?
For me, man, this is the one I'm paying attention to the most right now. And I think I know a lot of leaders that are in my stage that are in their early 50s or in their late 40s even. And they're asking the question, have I accomplished enough to warrant people wanting my advice? It's that king stage where you're going, have I accomplished enough? Have I shown enough like proof of concept? have I, you know, accomplished enough to like warrant people wanting to listen to me anymore? And that's a dangerous trap, man. Cause it's like the road to pleasing is never satisfied. Like that striving path, man, is just never satisfied. It doesn't matter what you do. It's never going to get satisfied.
So what does that look like in guys in their 50s, 60s, even 70s? I can think of some that is a shadow side question of, have I accomplished enough to warrant people wanting my advice? What do we do with that?
Well, I think it manifests with some overreaching. I think there's times when people leverage their authority because they've been in the place of authority for so long that they overreach on that. Mm. And I think that somehow, you know, it shows up that way. I also watch guys, man, it's like, I can't remember who shared this analogy with me years ago. It might have been John Woodall. But it's basically like, and you probably heard this, it's like a rubber band and it's just kind of getting pulled. And then you're 50, 52, 55. And all of a sudden something happens in your life and it triggers a release of all that shadow side that you never dealt with, never addressed the lies, never confessed. And it's like out of nowhere, it comes and slaps you right in the back of the head. And you find yourself in an immoral relationship, making immoral decisions, you know, buying the $75,000 next iteration of the Corvette. And you're like, everybody's like, oh, he's having a midlife crisis. No. I think this shadow question, have I accomplished enough to warrant people wanting my advice, is like you're having to enable yourself with all these things that are vices that hold you back because something smacked you upside the head and said, man, I have lied to myself for so long that I wasn't able to actually embrace truth and get transformed. This is a shadow question that I think a lot of guys my age need to start really digging into and asking the Holy Spirit, like, hey, am I connected to my accomplishments?
Yep.
Like, is my identity connected to my job? Is my role defining me? Man, those are serious questions you got to ask. Because if you start affixing yourself to all those things as the person you think you are for the world to see, you're going to always, it's just a slippery slope. You're going to always find it wanting, I think. I mean, that's my summation of that.
Yeah. Thinking about some of the shadow sides, I think the rubber band thing of just pulling and then it snapping is more, it feels like that's the midlife thing, the 40s. That feels resonates because 20s and 30s, we do what we think we should, addressing drive, mm-hmm. who am I, purpose, like all this stuff. It comes up wanting in 40s. I'm watching my peers. That's the rubber bandy thing. And it's interesting because some moms, like it's guys and girls and thinking about the different shadow sides and patterns. A lot of moms, that mom transition of purpose, significance, all, like when the kids are starting to check out in 40s or 50, wherever, depending, that's always a dynamic one with these shadow sides. And for guys in their 60s, I think more along the lines of this question. Typically, it's guys in their 60s that I see trying to transition from their career and girls in their career into next chapter. And the shadow side of that next chapter of being a sage, which is post what I can accomplish to more what I know and who I am, is that shadow side question. Have I accomplished enough for people warrant my advice? Because that's all I have left of value in some ways, which is the wisdom, discernment that I have to offer.
Yeah. There's one more shadow side though.
All right.
There's one more. And if you're 65 or older and you're listening to this podcast, I know you have had to ask yourself this question because you've retired. You've walked away from the boardroom. You've handed over the reins. You've passed off the founding thing you did to some other young buck to come up and do it better. And you've walked away from it. You're playing golf. You're probably fishing with your buddies. You might be throwing some, you know, horseshoes in the backyard. But I think the question that you're asking yourself at 65 and up is, am I so old that it don't matter anymore?
Huh.
You talk to us. If you sat down with a 72-year-old leader who has accomplished so much and they've handed off stuff and walked away from it and they haven't created anything new in a while or haven't been like drumming up new ideas, if you sat with them for very long, they would feel like they've been discarded. Am I so old that it don't matter anymore? Which is interesting, because if you go back to the first question in Boyhood that I think is a shadow side, what's the first question?
Yeah.
How old do I have to be to matter?
That's pretty awesome.
It's circular, bro. Like, from the time you're born to the time you're about 19, you ask yourself, how old do I have to be to matter? And then you go out and you conquer life, right? And now you've become a sage, and you're 70 or 75 or 80, and you're asking the exact same question again, but you're asking it in the flip side. Am I so old that I don't matter anymore? Which is a lie. And you and I both know that, man, because we've got guys in our life that are in their 70s.
Oh, yeah.
I think about Bruce McNichol, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this dude is crushing life, and he's in his 70s, right? I think about Bill Thrall, right? I don't know him personally, but he's in his 80s. He's crushing life. Like, that's a choice. That's a choice. Either you have believed the lie that I'm so old I don't matter, or you flipped it on his ear and said, no, there's a truth here, and that lie is not going to create a shadow that I walk in, because I walk in light. And the light is, bro, I can do this till I'm 90. I can do this till I take my last breath, whatever that age is.
It's an interesting question of, do I matter, which underpins all of us as humans, does my life matter? But into 60s and 70s, for most of our life, the daily inputs from the world for the majority of our life is, you matter based on what you do, produce, influence, lead, and accomplish. Like, your value is based on what you do. That's a really dynamic shift into, can you make the shift from what I do to answer that question of, am I too old to matter? And because we hear that through the lens of, am I too old to do anything? When really everything we need is you to be. Like, you to be, not do. And that is what we want and what we need from the wisdom, the discernment. But because of the lack of do and the lack of confidence in the be, lingering from that question of what if fears and failures expose and people abandon me? Or no, sorry, the last one, have I accomplished enough to warrant people wanting my advice? That's like lingering from the previous question, am I too old?
Right.
And so people don't, so if I'm watching guys and girls go, if they're stuck there, then they go, well, I'm not doing as much, which has been my value from the world. And I'm not at a point where I wanted to be in regards to being, therefore I'm going to check out. I'm not going to invest, lead, love, bring my person to my kids, person. Grandkids, friends, people around me because of the shame lie that says, well, I'm not a do anymore and I'm not a be because I'm behind where I should have been at 65.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, man. Every one of these shadow sides.
Bring your broken be to us because it's like, because that shame is keeping you on the sidelines and we need your brokenness in your being.
We need that be. Yeah. Oh, we need it. We need it.
Man.
So man, every one of these shadow sides, like, I would say this to anybody that's listening right on the podcast. Like, if you feel stuck, doesn't matter what stage you're in. If you feel stuck, I would ask these questions and be honest with God about them. And then I would go back to what we said at the very top of this podcast. I go back to, have you stopped and stood still long enough to observe, to orient, to decide, to act? And I want to take the OODA loop one step further. Okay. So the OODA loop, observe, orient, decide, act. One of the verses I think that pins this down to where it's not really a military concept, it's actually a biblical concept. Like, I want to pin this down to scripture, right? So Jeremiah 6, verse 16. Check out what he says. Stand at the crossroads and look. Which I'm going to summarize. If you're stuck, stand still and look. Observe, right? And then he says, ask for the ancient paths. What is that? Orient. Look around. What what do the ancient paths say? Like, what are the ancient paths, which is the Word, which is Jesus? Like, what is it? What is he saying to you, right?
Yeah.
Orient. And then he goes on to say this, ask where the good way is and walk in it.
Decide and act.
Ask what the good way, decide and act.
That's right.
And this is the last part of that verse. This is a conclusion. And this is what I love the most about this verse. And it says, and you will find rest. Because every one of these shadow sides, if you feel like you're stuck, it's probably because you also feel equally like you're striving. And those two things go together. Striving and stuck go together. They're joined at the hip. And I can't tell you how many, I literally can't tell you how many times, because I don't know. It's not because I've studied it. I just don't know what the number is. How many times God refers to rest being your best. Like, how to find success is not found in striving. It's not found in the subtleties of these stuck things. It's really found in this beauty of rest. And Jeremiah 6:16 says, you do these things, Uda, which is observe, orient, decide, act. You do, and he says it differently in Jeremiah 6, obviously. But at the end he says, and you will find rest.
Let's go.
And I think that's, if we could say, man, if there's a way to stand still and feel like we could do more, that I think that's where this truth is coming from, man. It's like, if people could, and it took me, and I'm still working on this, bro. I'm like still a work in progress through this, man. Like, I find myself striving at times, and then I realize, wait a second, I'm not actually going to get to do more if I do this. I'm actually going to end up doing less.
Yep.
So, yeah, man, that's some of the stuff, man.
I love it. Chad, I am so excited that you have joined this team and what God is doing in this little ministry that a lot of the people listening to this podcast, y'all have allowed us to enter into our, I think, 29th year and survive founder transition and get to a point of bringing on a guy like Chad, as a donor-driven model. Thank you for your faithfulness that has allowed us to pray big and dream big of what this chapter, what this movement of grace could be that we get to be a part of, and the stuff we're working on, and Chad, that you're going to help us be able to actually realize. I'm just super thankful for you and your gifts already in the first few months of you joining the team. So I know you got to go. Let us know what are you doing tonight, man?
Yeah, tonight we're launching a True Face Journey group at our house. So we're hosting five couples total, my wife and I. And man, so pumped about that.
Kickoff.
The True Face Journey. I think the True Face Journey is one of those experiences that help people truly begin to internalize what we've been talking about today. And then you're sitting in a community that you're like willing to grapple with that and actually wrestle some of those things down. So I'm excited, man. The five couples we got, you know, Kathy and I are one of those five. And I think, you know, for us, it's just the right time, man, to have that kind of community. So,
And if you're in your tonight, 50s or 60s asking those questions of, am I too old, you know, to matter, or do people want my advice? We want you to be. And this framework, you can invite some people into your life, do the True Faith Journey, and just be. And it will be what we are looking for. We need y'all, us younger people, to do what Chad's doing tonight. So thanks for doing that, Chad. As an old man pouring into others.
Yeah, don't let this deceive you, man.
Hey, put in the so we were talking beforehand. I think I'm stuck apparently in my when are people going to respect me? Speaking of the adolescent style beard. And so if you're on YouTube, here's my ask. Make in the comments, go ahead and say yes or no. I'll know what you mean. Yes to keeping the beard or no, because we just talked about it as a team, because I have a big presentation next week. I'm like, do I need to shave it? Because I feel so. Y'all can,
yeah, I mean, you know.
Help me get unstuck from my 20s.
But here's the thing, man. Like, having a beard that's in process is like the truest, like, it's the analogy of your life. You're in process. Like, it's all right. Like,
see, I don't know how to receive that.
Or you might need to shave it. I don't know. I think Emily needs at least, you know, quadruple the votes that everyone else does. She's probably the one that needs to vote the loudest.
She does. I asked her. She's like, I didn't even notice. I don't even I'm too busy. And that was a whole different wound.
We're gonna talk about kids, bro.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that next podcast when I'm in a better spot. Emily, yeah, she really didn't. I gave her the chance. She didn't vote. So now whoever's watching on YouTube, I trust you, yeah. Whatever you say. Yeah. All right.
We're in the hands of people.
Love y'all. See ya. Bye.
Bye, everyone.